In our series debut discussions, we're asking debut authors to tell us their story, not only the story in the novel they wrote, but the journey they took to hold that book in their hands. On today's episode, we welcome Ella Lee. Ella was raised in London by her parents, who emigrated from South Korea and Turkey. She attended the University of Oxford and previously practiced as a litigation lawyer. Her debut novel, Jaded, is out now. Welcome to Pop Fiction Women.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you're talking to two lawyers, I should warn you. One is still in big law, and Corinne was in big law. So this book really resonated for us in a lot of ways, which we'll get into in more depth. But first, I'd like to take you back. You know, writers are readers, and we'd love to hear the story of you as a reader.
So I'm an only child, and so I think that really made me a reader from a very young age. Not only was I an only child, but we moved around quite a lot. So it was sort of quite hard to form sort of lasting bases sort of wherever we were. So I was always a very, very voracious reader. And for context, my parents, I laugh about it now, but my parents were very, very adamant that I would speak both of their languages. So wow. I wasn't allowed to watch English TV. If I wanted to watch TV, it would have to be Korean TV or Turkish TV, which I think just drove me into books because
they're very
Korean dramas and Turkish dramas. They're very very TV novella type of thing. So I think that's kind of what drove me into books from the beginning.
It makes sense. And books, the way you describe it, you know, they go with you everywhere, unlike friend groups that don't move around. And you know, they are built in people comfort you can look to. So I think that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're a voracious reader, which tracks for being an author and also a lawyer.
Yeah.
How did you always know you wanted to write a book and the law was a stop along the way? Or how did all of that gel in your mind?
No, I didn't know I wanted to be a writer. I was told when I was a child that I'd make a really good lawyer, but in hindsight, I think that was not a compliment.
if it wasn't, I got the same compliment or insult, whichever it was, my whole life too. So I've never known which way that cuts.
I think I was just a very serious child. And then I applied to do law when I was 17. So basically straight out of school, went straight into it. So I never actually stopped to think about what I would do if I wasn't a lawyer. I didn't ever really think about being a writer. And then it was during the pandemic, actually, that I first started writing. And it all started with that first work party scene. And that was pretty much the first thing I ever wrote. Like, not just of Jaded, but like ever wrote. Creatively.
Outside of legal briefs and that kind of writing.
Outside of memos and stuff.
Right. Well, I mean, we laugh, but that is writing. I know, believe I'm a litigator too. I mean, so you are, you're exercising that muscle in a way. It's just, so it's, I don't, you know, it's not a huge leap from the writing perspective, but it's a huge leap, I think, to think about doing something else. That's a massive leap, but.
Totally. I do think lawyers are, I mean, there's a huge sort of lawyer to writer pipeline, right? And I think they go hand in hand, like in terms of the skill set, I think.
Yeah.
But I heard
but
you
is
say
a whole, other thing ahead. To create a fictional world, even one that has some roots, you know, some small tether to your own life, because I write about lawyers too. And it just, it's part of what you know, but you have to create the whole other world around it. So it is, in that way, it's a big leap.
Yeah.
Totally.
And I heard you say that it was the pandemic, but it had also been these conversations that you were having with so many women in your life, and that they was all sort of percolating, and so you might have sat down, it sounds like, to write it during the pandemic, but where these things have been sort of circling your brain and needed a way out, it sounds like.
Yeah, completely. I think the landscape has changed a lot now, where I think in workplaces people are encouraged to discuss, you know, negative experiences that they're having more so than they were sort of 7 or 8 years ago. But yeah, at the time it was just, as you said, it was just an accumulation of conversations, anecdotes, snippets here and there that were building and building. And then when the pandemic hit, I guess it was like the first time in 8 years that I'd actually had any meaningful amount of time to myself.
Yeah.
I could just sit, and I was forced to sit
with
all of these thoughts. And then I just needed an outlet for it. And that's kind of how it all started. And it's obviously since changed form completely. But I think at the time it was this sort of real need for an outlet.
Yeah. So this is a good time to tell our listeners what Jaded is about, maybe the elevator pitch or your little synopsis of this novel.
Yeah, so Jaded follows the main character, Jade, who is a 20-something biracial lawyer. And from the outside, she's really got everything. You know, she's got her career on the rise. She's got a very stable, loving relationship with a very handsome, successful man. And she's got a really loving family who, you know, are sort of her motivating driving force. And then something happens to her right at the start of the book in chapter one that causes her to totally reevaluate all the fault lines that are already existing in her life. And all those fault lines deepen and start to crack as a result.
So good. And so the novel follows Jade, as you said. She is fictional, of course, but does share some commonalities with you, even as you just described her. So tell us about your inspiration for Jade and your development of her, because, of course, yes, she has some commonalities, but, you know, you certainly diverge, I'm sure.
Totally. So Jade is sort of like an amalgamation of, obviously, some of my experiences. I think it's impossible to kind of extricate yourself, especially as a debut author, but as you said, some sort of biographical details, and then mainly my friends and my colleagues who are sort of women, but also women of color living and working in the city. And she was just sort of this mishmash of all of them at the very beginning. And then as time went on, I started to kind of distill her character more and more. And, you know, I had this brown woman who had kind of spent her life being the model minority and being sort of everything that society asks of immigrants. And then I kind of managed to kind of put a bit of distance between myself and my friends and her and sort of think, okay, objectively, like, how would someone who has spent her life being what everyone else wants her to be, what are her like internal conflicts? What are her core issues inside? And for Jade, it's that she has never had the opportunity to kind of form a sense of self or a sense of identity of her own because she's just so conscious about other people. So it took a lot of time to kind of shape her, I think.
Yeah. And how about writing that prologue? Because you really, I mean, it's so sharp, and I just knew her in, you know, 200 words. Mm-hmm. When did you write that in the process? And because I feel like you had to have written it when you knew her voice so well, or was that the thing that gave you her voice?
So I wrote the work party scene first, and then I think I wrote the prologue.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. And then when I was looking to query agents, a lot of pages were like, agents hate prologues. I have to delete it. Like, but then I was like, no, I think this does actually distill her into one page actually quite well. So I kind of held my ground on that, and I went with it. But I always knew that, except what I said earlier, that she would be this sort of model minority and something bad happens to her. And I was like, okay, on the day to day, like, how can I trickle that down into one page? And if anything, I there were periods where I had the prologue sort of printed out and on my wall, and I would keep like going back to it.
Oh, wow.
As a touchstone for her. I love that. I also have a prologue in my novel, and I've heard the same thing, and I kept it in and I stuck to my guns. It's really important when it sets the tone so clearly as it does in your novel.
Yeah.
I also want to talk about the work scene, which is so incredibly vivid. And it also does this beautiful thing where you set up a villain in David, and then you kind of give us a twist as Jade is probably feeling herself as she kind of uncovers what happens at the end of that night. The first three chapters, I think, are incredibly propulsive and, again, maybe too relatable. Did you always know the story was going to start here? It sounds like it. And but did that ever change? Did you ever, you know, have it set up in a different way? Or was this just the inciting incident that let the whole novel catch on fire?
That was always the inciting incident, but the lots of like smaller elements sort of within it changed quite a lot. So, for example, with Josh, I added quite late in the game that she actually was quite attracted to him and that she had kind of flirted with him quite a lot. I added that quite late in. I added the bit when they go home. I don't think this is a spoiler because it's right at the start of the book, but where they go back to her place and she says, actually, do you want to come in? All those sort of very small tweaks that do actually ultimately end up changing, you know, I think a reader's view of what happens. All of that kind of kept being shaped for a really, really long time. Yeah. I often found whenever I did edits, the first third would take me the same amount of time as the second two thirds, because it was just, I would just obsess over that opening chapter. And even sort of in the second chapter when she meets Kit for the first time, a lot of the tone of that had to change because he had to really come across as like the perfect guy for her. Whereas it wasn't necessarily that way in earlier drafts.
Yeah,
but that's leading me so nicely into my next question, because I that attention to detail that you gave to those opening few chapters really comes through. So like you said, in one of them, she meets Kit, who seems truly wonderful, but maybe accepts a version of Jade that's sanitized or sort of shined to perfection, which of course means she can't fully be herself around him, which is one of the fault lines that you mentioned earlier. So tell us about weaving in the arc of this relationship to what, you know, otherwise could have just been a workplace drama with a sexual assault. Like, so talk to us about that.
Yeah. So I think the sort of the relationship was really important to the story, because I think when we talk about assault generally, we tend, and particularly in the workplace, it almost seems to just like exist in that vacuum. Like it almost seems to just exist within, as you said, workplace drama. And that's the kind of catch-all term for it. But actually, it was so important for me to show that Jade is a real person with a life outside of work, and contextualize the aftermath of what happened to her within sort of her entire life and all the other people that are in her life. And I thought, you know, when something like that does happen to you, I imagine that sort of your romantic relationships are the ones that get hit probably the hardest. So that was really important to me. And I think Kit originally was much more of a villain character. He was a lot more toxic in the earlier drafts. But I actually thought, I left it for about a few months and then I came back to it and I was like, this is just not interesting. Like, I'm like, if you just have like a guy who's just not very nice and he's just super toxic, I feel like that just creates no like conflict for a reader. Whereas I think having a guy who genuinely believes that he's a feminist and genuinely believes that he loves this woman as much as physically possible and still not be able to provide everything that she needs, I think that was important to show.
Yeah. You really nailed it too. It gave a lot more context to the conversation. And also this, you're right, it's not a vacuum, our workplace. And even for lawyers who work so many hours, where you have so many scenes where she's just like coming home, he's already in bed, she just snuggles up with him, and then she gets back up before he has even moved. But that's life too. It's not, so these opening chapters, as we're talking about, concern themselves with Jade's sexual assault, but the effects continue throughout, especially because a lot of alcohol was involved. And there are some really visceral scenes where her body expresses things that her mind cannot and that she can't articulate. What was the process of writing those scenes like? And how do you really go there, but also protect yourself? Because you have to write good visceral fiction like this. You have to go there, but you also have to separate it out, because lest it become your own experience of feeling it.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that.
I luckily actually got this question last week and I had to really sit with it and think with it because I'm sure, you know, as writers, you know, like, I struggle to remember the first draft. Like, it's all just a bit of a blur.
Yeah.
That with it. And I kind of clocked the early days of writing Jaded coincided with when I had seriously started therapy. And I don't know, like, sort of what the culture is like in the States, but in the UK, it's still not that common to kind of regularly go to therapy. And still not that accessible. But I had committed sort of earlier in the pandemic, maybe 3 or 4 months earlier. And I don't think that's a coincidence. Like, I don't think it's a coincidence that I started meaningfully working on processing sort of other things for me that I actually felt able to go into this and write something that's so kind of raw and quite difficult. And I think the therapy kind of gave me the skill set to kind of put distance between myself and Jade and kind of put distance between myself and the work. And I think a lot of times, particularly for debut authors, there's this huge expectation that you kind of pour all your life's trauma into your manuscript. And I really didn't want to do that. So I think looking back, that's kind of what helped me quite a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. But you have to pour your trauma into it, even if it doesn't relate one-to-one, because there is something about that feeling. And you must have been feeling, it doesn't matter if the situation is the same or any of the facts are the same. It's that feeling of being able to be vulnerable and knowing for you as the author that you were safe. That is, which is something I think therapy gives as well. Wow. I'm glad you got that question. We got to have 2.0.
Yeah, that's incredible though, because it sounds like it gave you the access to the feelings, but also the distance to protect yourself. So it's amazing.
Yeah. I think as a result, Jaded ended up like emotionally honest, but not like factually or biographically honest, if that makes sense.
Yes, that is exactly what those are the perfect words for what I was trying to say before that. And also leads me to my next question, which is I experienced that. And I got it from like page 350 or 352 to the end of the novel. I was sobbing, like hiccuping, like raw emotion just kind of erupted from me. And I don't want to spoil what happens, but I wanted to know what you want readers to take away from this novel, a feeling, a thought, a path, a theme that you'd want them to take away.
I think it's very hard to say because I think writers shouldn't try and like dictate what readers should take from their books. But I think if I sort of had like a hope, it would be like empathy for people. I think, a lot of the times when we talk about this topic in the media and on the news, it's just so sensationalized and we don't sit with the victims and we don't sit with, you know, what it might be taking out of them and how much of a huge far-reaching impact it would have on their lives. And I think if someone can take away just a bit of empathy for somebody who might be going through that, and you know, at least in the UK it's 1 in 4 women, so it's like the chances are you'll know someone who's going through that. And I just hope that readers can kind of learn a bit about how, you know, I'm not saying that Jade's account is the only account, but just kind of learn how to empathize with these sort of stories and learn that it's far bigger than like a headline or a vacuum, as we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, because you talked about her romantic relationship, her family, and how all of that shaped her as well, to not only what happened, but how you react to it. And
how everyone in your life reacts to it. Friends, colleagues, you know, you give all those different perspectives. I loved her friends, particularly Adele. But they were so vivid. Yeah, I mean, that nuance of the situation, I think the way you describe it does lend itself to being empathetic. It's not so clear, you know? I mean, your mission is accomplished. If that was your goal, believe me. So I want to talk about sort of your a lawyer, a litigator, as we said, you're writing, but you're writing one style. The pandemic comes, you finally sort of, these things that are percolating, you sit down to write at any point then or later, did you rely on craft books or writing classes, or did you just think, you know what, I'm just going to sit down and see what happens on my own?
Yes, I had no training in terms of writing training at all. I very much just word vomited, especially the first draft. And then I think obviously I kind of trimmed it down and finessed it. But in terms of craft books, I struggle with craft books because I find that they can be very prescriptive and very formulaic in a way that I don't think is necessarily helpful for a lot of people. I think they work for a very specific type of book that is very sort of plot heavy. But I think if that's not necessarily what you're going for, I don't know. I mean, I can't say that I've read every craft book out there, but the ones that I have come across, I kind of have tried, and I've tried kind of following their systems. It's just not quite worked for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, what about when the first draft is done? Do you have a trusted friend read? Do you find another writer?
I wrote in secret.
Yeah.
No one knew other than my partner until I pretty much got the book deal, I think.
Wow.
I think one or two trusted friends knew when I signed with my agent, but even then it sort of wasn't widely known. I did have a sort of editor look over, a sort of paid editor look over my submission, just because I was doing it alone and I was no objectivity when it comes to this. But otherwise, no, not really, which I don't recommend doing in hindsight. If I could do it again, I'd get more people involved.
Yeah. But I think maybe for your first, that is maybe not that uncommon. I mean, people maybe don't want to tell people I'm writing a novel because, you know, it's not something you're ready to share, or you don't want the reaction, and you were a lawyer at the time, it'd be like, what are you doing? I mean, so I know that I wrote my first one in secret too. So I totally get it. So then we have the dreaded process of getting an agent. You've now written this manuscript. Like you said, you don't have a wide circle of writer friends, or you're not in the writing group. So tell us then how you took that and how your query process went.
So I got a list of sort of the 20 sort of biggest agencies in the UK. And it was kind of like going through their websites with like a fine tooth comb. I kind of very lawyery about it. I had this whole spreadsheet.
Of course.
I went through every single agency's website. I pulled out the agents who were, first of all, open to submissions, but also who either had worked on books that I enjoyed, worked on books that I thought were comps to Jaded, or were looking for books that were similar to Jaded. And then I kind of went full like FBI stalker mode, and I'd like look through their like Twitters and Instagram and just kind of get a sense of like what their tastes are. So I did that with probably about 15-ish agents, and I just kind of put it all into this like tracker that sort of also had their like submission guidelines and which email to put it in, just sort of this sort of master document. And then on the morning of my wedding day, actually, I queried 5 agents.
That is amazing.
Crazy. I love it.
I was just like this ball of anxiety, and I must have just did like an outlet for it.
And also you'd be distracted, so you won't be checking and refreshing every minute.
You're busy.
I love that.
That's great.
That was 5 on that day. And then that was obviously a Saturday. And then on the Monday, I got 2 manuscript requests. And then I took that and I kind of went to 5 more agents. So I think in total, I went to about 12. And because I already had a manuscript request, it kind of moved quite quickly. That's kind of the process.
Wow.
And then you sign with your agent, and do you do an edit or do you go right out onto submission?
We did an edit together. So I signed with her in October. We did an edit for about a month and a half until about Christmas. And then my agent was like, look, there's no point kind of submitting to publishers sort of over Christmas and New Year's. Like, no one's going to look at it. So we kind of paused until January. We went out on submission in January, and that moved kind of within a day, essentially. So I feel very, very lucky in that sense. And then I got that book deal, and then maybe I want to say 2 or 3 weeks later, we got the US book deal. So it kind of cascaded quite quickly in that sense.
Mm-hmm. And were Love you that. Dual tracking, as we like to call it at this time? Were you still practicing law?
Okay. I carried on practicing law for another year and a half after that.
Okay. And so this is always a question for the lawyers here, and we interview a lot of lawyers. Like, at what point did you... It's a question for us, really, of also of identity. Like, when do you call yourself the writer when you've been calling yourself and identifying as the lawyer? And I'm not saying you're not still a lawyer, but at some point, when did you decide that this was it? You're going to do the writing.
So I had like sort of other issues as well, like that made it quite difficult for me to manage full-time law. Mm-hmm. And sort of basically full-time writing and mm-hmm. all my sort of other things going on in my life. Mm-hmm. It was actually, I pretty much was like, I'm never going to give up law, in the sense mm-hmm. that it was such an enormous part of who I was mm-hmm. and who I am. It was sort of like the leading thing I would say about myself. You know, if I yes. went to a wedding and I met somebody, I'd be like, blah, 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 this is me. I'm a lawyer. Like, you know. Mm-hmm.
We know.
Yeah. Oh, we know. I'm like this. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what would I say then? What else would I say about myself?
Usually the person I'm talking to is either a lawyer or like works in some sort of similarly mm-hmm. corporate environment. And that's how you kind of connect and you get chatting. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I live by an ambulance station, so... And then it ended up, I actually had a conversation with my dad, and I was like, look, I'm really struggling to balance all of these things, and it's really taking it out of me. And like, me and my husband haven't had like a weekend together in 2 years because I'm writing every weekend and all these things. And my dad was actually the one to be like, you can always go back to law, but you're never going to have this opportunity again. You're never going to be a debut author ever again. So even if it just means you take a year out. And I had to kind of convince myself that it was only a year out.
Yeah.
Because I was taking, other women take maternity leave, or other women go travel leave. Like, this is what I'm doing for a year.
Yeah.
It's now been over a year. Haven't gone back yet.
And I think she puts a yet in there.
Of course.
You've got to be prudent about these things.
Yeah.
But I think only in the last 3 months have I confidently been able to say, oh, I'm a writer, which is quite... Yeah. Weird. It's there's a lot of imposter syndrome wrapped up in that, I think.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. We can relate, let me tell you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And all of these things are the white knuckle grip on identity, the imposter syndrome, all of these things that Kate and I are constantly working out. One tool that we've used to mm-hmm. kind of, I don't know, expand ourselves a little bit, is astrology. And we always like to, just out of curiosity's sake, ask our authors what your sign is. And do you relate to it?
Wait, if she's not a fixed sign, I'm gonna be very surprised.
And a Scorpio,
here.
Really.
Okay. Oh, no. So I am a Cancer, but I have a Leo rising and a Leo moon.
Okay. So there, I was going to say Leo.
Also the water of the Cancer. Cancer and Leo, that's a Scorpio together.
Yeah. This explains a lot. Okay, I'm a Leo. So literally everything you're saying is like, I'm like, that's me. But your Leo moon, that explains that's more inside. And then presenting as a Leo, the Leo rising. Yeah. Okay, this makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
A lot of people saying I'm either a Scorpio or a Leo. So, all checks out.
It's because of the fixed nature. And then, it's like next level. They're intuiting your sun and your moon together, which makes perfect sense.
Wow.
I love to hear that. So you're interested a little bit, at least. You know some
your
people here just tell us their birthdays. They don't even know their sun sign.
I am interested, mainly because I think my mum was very interested in like Chinese zodiacs.
Yeah.
I think maybe that like set the scene for me to be quite interested in my zodiac. And then I think I find it really interesting that like me and my dad are both Cancers and we've both married Leos. Like, I find things like patterns like that really interesting. So I am interested. I can't say that, like, I would, if someone else told me like what their sort of chart was, if I'd be able to kind of know what that says about them. But I'm interested in it as far as kind of, I actually went to a talk by this other author who said that, you know, she had a question saying, how do you form your characters? And she said she figured out their birth chart.
I love that.
Entire astrological chart, and then that basically determined their personality for her, which I think
I love that. It's perfect.
But Corinne, haven't you said that it's good to for relationships if you choose someone who has the same moon sign as you? So
So
your husband's a Leo. This is okay.
I like it. That's a deep connection.
It makes sense. And we've had other authors say that they know their character's sign, although I'm not sure anyone's done the full chart. I love that for this author.
I don't even know Jane's birthday. Like, I know that her birthday isn't between November and June, because that's when the book is set.
She's
somewhere between June and October.
I have to tell you, I love astrology, but I had to manipulate my characters' signs by so many other things that were not them and their personalities. So that's a little too much for me to do it in the fiction, but I love to hear it. I love to hear how people use it as a tool.
And I love, I sometimes like to ask this depending on the title, but was this the title all along? Because it fits obviously so well with the double meaning of her name and jaded. And is this what it was saved as as a Word document? No. Okay.
It was saved as like document 2 or whatever.
You didn't even have a title.
I didn't even bother to say untitled, like, or WIC or something. So distinctly remember I was like in bed, I was reading, and I was like, the book I was reading had the word jaded in it, like just in a sentence. I was like, like, light bulb moment. And I was just like, that's the title of the book. That's it. Done. Because her name was always Jade.
Perfect.
So sort of about 6 months in, I think, just before.
And it stuck. I mean, that's the other thing, that it actually made it through the whole process and it stuck.
I actually had one agent offer and I said, what would you change about the book? And they were like, the title. I was like, okay, no.
And you don't get me, and you don't get the book.
Well, we like to close with asking what you are loving right now. Any books that you're reading, TV shows, movies, anything that you just are obsessed with right now?
I have just watched the TV show of Pachinko on Apple TV, which was stunning. Like, maybe it's because, like, I speak Korean and, like, my mom lived in Japan for a bit, so I just kind of, it's just beautiful. It was, like, so cinematic. And I think they're coming out with a second season, so I'm very excited. Books-wise, I'm trying to think. So I'm not sure if you guys relate to this, but when I'm writing, I find it impossible to read at the same time. And, like, I find that
my
brain
just... Not Korean, but I'm like that.
But I'm loving audiobooks. I've just listened to Careless by Kirsty Capes, which is about a girl who is in the foster care system and becomes pregnant. And also, I don't know why it took me so long, but I've just listened to The Vanishing Half, which was I'm hoping to kind of get back into reading relatively soon. Fingers crossed.
I'm a big Audible fan too, so they're a nice way to get it in.
And you went away to write some more. Is that correct? I think I saw that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I went to Turkey for a month to write my second book, which was amazing. I think I spent a lot of time in Turkey as a child, and then just obviously as I went to uni and whatever, just kind of didn't only ever went for like weekends. So I went for a full month by myself, and that was really, really helpful. And I got like 2 drafts down, so
that's great.
No distractions.
I love that.
And how was writing the second one?
Hard. part. Yeah. Because I wrote Jaded with a full-time job, I just assumed that I'd write the second one like in 2 weeks. Like I was like, yeah. Oh, well, I have all this time. I'll just get it out. And obviously that didn't happen. Yeah, it was a lot harder. I think your debut novel is like the culmination of like everything you know and everything you've read and everything you've thought, basically. And then you just have to like start again from your second book. And
yes,
it's in, thank God. And it's with my editor now. So let's see. She says she likes it.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, Ella, thank you so much for joining us. This is a wonderful conversation and an amazing book. So we appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, thank you so much. The lawyer in me was just so, the scenes, you've captured it. I hate to say how well you captured working in big law, but it was spot on.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much.
Oh, wait, I forgot to tell you. Oh my God, I cannot believe it. You just said that. Like literally, what is it? 2618, whatever it is, was my
your office number?
That was my office number.
Stop it!
I swear.
2816.
I know it was 28 because that was we were on the 28th floor.
28th floor.
And I was like, and you wrote it so many times, or not so many, but enough that I was like, I cannot believe this. This is like all coming to me. That is wild.
That forgot is
that. That is very crazy. I did not know that.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Anyway.
Why you've related to the book then, for sure.
Yes. It was like, it was because it was almost subconscious. It was like, it kept coming to me. I got to go back to my office. And I was like seeing myself in my office.
And now I'm going to be using the phrase dining al desco as opposed to al fresco, which I thought was so perfect because I cannot tell you how many meals I've eaten at my desk like that.
Oh, yeah.
So,
all right. So thanks again.
Thank you.